Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. Listen for a report on the environment from Brian Lynn. Pete Musto brings us our weekly science report. Then you will hear our American history program, The Making of a Nation. But first, this report.
Koalas are officially listed as at risk of disappearing in New South Wales, Australia. Now, the state's government has a $34 million plan to protect the beloved animals. Koalas have large, hairy ears. They have especially sharp claws, which help them climb trees. They are marsupials, meaning they carry their babies in an opening of skin on the mother's stomach. The animals are native to Australia and are described in many Aboriginal stories of creation. Koalas face several threats, including loss of habitat due to land clearing, dog attacks, and heat waves. A sexually transmitted disease, chlamydia, is also harming koalas' health. Gabriel Upton is the Environment Minister of New South Wales. She told VOA about her state's plan to set up a group of wildlife hospitals to treat injured and sick koalas. She also said researchers are testing a vaccine that would protect koalas against chlamydia. A new koala hospital will open in Port Stephens, north of Sydney. It will join an already existing hospital in the New South Wales town of Port Macquarie, which began treating injured marsupials in the 1970s. Conservationists have welcomed the idea of opening a second hospital. However, they argue that the government's multi-million dollar plan does not deal with the number one threat to koalas, land clearing. I'm Susan Shand.
Scientists have found that levels of a now banned chemical are rising again in Earth's atmosphere. The chemical is called CFC-11. It is the second most common kind of CFC, short for chlorofluorocarbon. Chlorofluorocarbons were once widely used in many products. They were in air conditioners, refrigerators, and spray cans. CFCs were added to insulation foam and fire suppression products. Scientists discovered over 40 years ago that these man-made chemicals can reach Earth's upper atmosphere. In the 1980s, CFCs were blamed for making a hole in Earth's ozone layer. Ozone is a form of oxygen. It is found in the air we breathe and in Earth's stratosphere. The ozone layer protects life on our planet by blocking harmful radiation from the sun. But closer to Earth's surface, ozone is a common pollutant. It can harm people, crops, and other plants. The first step in international efforts to protect the ozone layer was an agreement called the Montreal Protocol. It was signed in 1987 in an effort to end or sharply reduce the use of over 100 known ozone-eating CFCs. The protocol called for a complete ban on CFC 11 by 2010. But scientists say the banned substance did not disappear. Results of a new study on the rising emissions were published in the science journal Nature. Scientist Stephen Motzka was one of the writers of the study. He is with the United States National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The agency keeps detailed information about Earth's climate. We're raising a flag to the global community to say, this is what's going on, Motzka said. And it is taking us away from timely recovery of the ozone layer. Each year, natural processes remove about 2% of CFC 11 from the air. Scientists say the chemical can stay in the atmosphere for about 50 years. Measurements taken from around the world suggest the CFC 11 emissions are coming from northeastern Asia, the study found. Either someone's making the banned compound, or it's sloppy byproducts that haven't been reported as required, Monska said. He added that if the source of the new emissions can be identified and controlled soon, damage to the ozone layer should be minor. But, he said, if not dealt with soon, there could be great delays in the ozone layer's recovery. I'm Brian Lynn.
Some countries ban possession and use of the drug marijuana, but it is legal in parts of the United States. 9 states and Washington, D.C. have measures legalizing recreational uses of marijuana. The drug is approved for medical purposes in a total of 29 states. But in Oregon, an oversupply of marijuana has driven down prices of the drug. This has led some worried growers to start moving towards another product, the hemp plant, to keep their businesses profitable. Marijuana comes from the dried leaves and flowers of the cannabis sativa or cannabis indica plant. Hemp is another kind of cannabis. It does not have the same intoxicating effects as the widely known drug. Hemp contains less than 0.3% of THC, the substance that gives marijuana its powerful effect. Growing industrial hemp is legal under federal law, and the plant can be sold for use in things like cloth, food, seed, and building materials. In Oregon, the number of requests for permission to grow hemp is now 20 times what it was in 2015. That makes Oregon second only to Colorado among the 19 states with active hemp farming.
The changing market comes at the same time as demand is rising for a chemical that comes from hemp. That chemical is cannabidiol, or CBD, which some people see as good for human health. In its purer form, CBD oil can sell for thousands of dollars per kilogram. farmers can make more than $100,000 on less than half a hectare of land by growing hemp to produce it. That purified substance can also be made into crystallized particles. Jared McCord grows marijuana in southern Oregon. He just added 5 hectares of hemp to his land. He told the Associated Press that many people see it as a new way to get rich quickly. "This is a business," he said. "You've got to adapt, and you've got to be a problem solver." But there is a problem few people predicted when Oregon voters approved a measure to legalize marijuana 4 years ago.
The state's climate is perfect for growing marijuana, and growers produce unusually large crops. And under state law, none of it can leave Oregon. That, combined with a decision to not limit the number of permits for growers, has created an oversupply. The total amount of marijuana stored in Oregon is shocking for a state its size. Many people smoke the flower of the plant, and there are nearly 450,000 kilograms of usable flower in the state. There is an additional 159,000 kilograms of other forms of marijuana, including products one can eat or drink. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission supervises the state's marijuana industry. The commission says some of the flower is used in specialty products, like oils, which have increased in popularity. But the agency cannot say how much. A detailed study of the market is currently taking place. The price for a single gram of marijuana has fallen about 50% since 2015, from around $14 to around $7. That information comes from the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis. Growers and sellers alike have felt the effect. Trey Willison changed his farming business from marijuana to hemp this season. Now he says he is considering destroying some of his crops instead of selling them at low prices. "Whoever would have thought we'd get to the point of destroying pounds of marijuana," Willison said.
This difficult choice is driving more of Oregon's marijuana growers towards hemp. The crop is already popular in states like Colorado and Kentucky and gets a lot of attention in the cannabis industry. In Oregon, the number of government permits to grow hemp rose from 12 in 2015 to 353 by early May 2018. And the state is now second nationwide in terms of approved licensed hectares. Colorado is the U.S. leader in hemp production. It and Washington were the first states to widely legalize marijuana. Both have seen prices drop for marijuana, but not as much as in Oregon.
In Oregon, people are increasingly interested in the gold-colored oil CBD. Its popularity has risen sharply among self-described cannabis experts and is quickly being seen as normal by the general public. At least 50% of hemp nationwide is being grown for CBD extraction. And Oregon is riding the top of that wave, said Eric Steenstra. He is the president of Vote Hemp, an independent organization that fights for pro-hemp laws. "There are a lot of growers who already have experience growing cannabis, and when you're growing for CBD, there are a lot of the same techniques that you use for growing marijuana," he said. CBD is appearing in everything, from beauty products to bottled water to animal food. Supporters say CBD offers a number of healing effects, from easing pain to calming nerves. However, scientists warn that there have been few wide-reaching studies of how CBD affects humans.
That is mostly because the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration still considers cannabidiol a Schedule I drug, meaning it is illegal to buy or sell. And the government requires special approval to study it. Ziva Cooper is an associate professor of clinical neurobiology at Columbia University in New York. She is investigating the possible medical effects of cannabis and cannabinoids. Cooper says small studies involving animals have shown CBD could be helpful in treating pain, drug dependency, and other conditions. Next month, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration could approve the first medicine made from CBD. It is used to treat people with epilepsy. I'm Lucia Malonig.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. June 18, 1910, was an exciting day for Theodore Roosevelt. It was the day that the former American president returned from a long trip to Africa and Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people gathered in New York City to welcome him home. There were speeches and bands and a parade. Frank Oliver and Tony Riggs tell us about Teddy Roosevelt's trip. They also tell us how political problems hurt his friendship with President William Howard Taft.
It was the perfect end to a trip that began 3 weeks after Theodore Roosevelt completed his presidency. Most of the trip was a huge success. In Africa, Theodore Roosevelt spent months hunting wild animals. He shot many lions, elephants, and other animals. He brought all of them back and gave them to the Smithsonian Institution. After hunting in Africa, he and his wife Edith went to Europe.
The Roosevelts visited Italy and met the king and queen. They visited Vienna and met the ruler of Austria and Hungary. In Germany, they met Kaiser Wilhelm II. Kaiser Wilhelm invited the former American president to watch a big parade of German troops. He told him, "You are the first civilian who has ever joined the Kaiser in reviewing the troops of Germany." The two men were photographed shaking hands. On the back of the photograph, the Kaiser wrote, "When we shake hands, we shake the world." The Roosevelts met the kings and queens of Norway, Belgium, and the Netherlands. They met the crown princes of Sweden and Denmark. And while in England, Mr. Roosevelt served as America's official representative at the funeral of King Edward VII.
Theodore Roosevelt made a number of speeches at several universities, including Oxford and the Sorbonne. Yet all these activities did not keep him from reading newspapers and letters from home. the news troubled him. He had led the Republican Party with great success. Now, the party seemed to be falling apart. It had split into two groups. One group included conservatives who supported President William Howard Taft. The other group included progressives who opposed Taft. Theodore Roosevelt had worked hard to get William Howard Taft elected. President Taft had been in office a little more than a year. Yet, in that short time, he had broken almost completely with the progressives who had supported Roosevelt.
The split developed because progressives expected Taft to rule as Roosevelt had done, with energy and emotion. They wanted a man who could excite people with dreams of social progress. Theodore Roosevelt was such a man. William Howard Taft was not. He was a big, slow-moving man. He refused to make quick decisions. As a former judge, he depended on facts, not emotion, to make decisions. President Taft did much to carry out the reform programs Theodore Roosevelt had begun. But his methods led people to believe that he was really trying to kill the programs.
Taft wrote to Roosevelt shortly before the former president sailed for home. "I do not know if I have had harder luck than other presidents," he said. "But I do know I have succeeded far less than others. I have been trying to carry out your policies, but my method of doing so has not worked smoothly." A few weeks later, Theodore Roosevelt returned home. In a speech to those who welcomed him in New York, he said, "I am ready and willing to do my part to help solve America's problems. And these problems must be solved if this country is to reach the high level of its hopes." To President Taft, Roosevelt wrote, "I will make no speeches or say anything for 2 months, but I will keep my mind open as I keep my mouth shut."
President Taft invited Theodore Roosevelt to visit him at the White House. Roosevelt said he could not. However, he did meet with many of the progressive opponents of the president. Later, he met with Taft at the president's summer home in Massachusetts. It was not a happy meeting. The two friends were tense. By this time, Roosevelt had decided that he agreed with the progressives. He believed President Taft had turned back many of Roosevelt's policies.
Roosevelt decided it was time for him to go to the American people. He accepted an invitation to a celebration in Wyoming. He traveled west by train. He stopped in many towns and cities to make speeches. He spoke of party unity. He tried to heal the split that had weakened the Republican Party. But the policies he proposed were progressive. Conservatives refused to support them. President Taft could not understand Roosevelt's purposes. "If I only knew what he wanted," Taft said, "I would do it. But he has told me nothing. I am deeply wounded. He gives me no chance to explain my position or to learn his."
Theodore Roosevelt hoped his speaking trip would help Republican Party candidates win in the 1910 congressional elections. His efforts seemed to fail. Republicans were defeated in many states. For a year after the party's defeat in the congressional elections, Theodore Roosevelt remained silent. Then, near the end of 1911, America's political parties began to prepare for the presidential election that would be held the following year. Roosevelt was sure Taft could not be reelected. Taft had become very conservative. He had close ties to business interests. What the people wanted, thought Roosevelt, was a progressive president. What they wanted was a man like himself. So Theodore Roosevelt began to speak out again in opposition to many of the things President Taft was doing. For example, President Taft had proposed treaties with Canada, Britain, and France. Roosevelt criticized them.
Taft was troubled. He told a friend, "It is very hard to take all these blows from Roosevelt. I do not know what he is trying to do, except to make my way more difficult. It is very hard to see a close friendship going to pieces like a rope of sand." By now, it was clear to Taft that Roosevelt wanted to be the presidential candidate of the Republican Party in the election of 1912. Earlier, this would have pleased Taft. He would have been happy to leave the White House. But the situation was different now. Roosevelt had changed. Taft felt that the policies he proposed seemed too extreme. Taft decided it was his duty to oppose Roosevelt and the progressives. He would seek re-election. Taft believed he could win the Republican nomination for president. He still had the support of many party leaders.
4 months before the Republican nominating convention opened, several progressive Republican governors appealed to Roosevelt. They urged him to declare himself a candidate for president. Roosevelt, they said, was the man to lead the nation into a new era of social progress. Then Taft made a strong statement against the progressives. "They are seeking," he said, "to pull down the temple of freedom and representative government." A reporter asked Roosevelt to answer Taft's statement. Roosevelt said, "My hat is in the ring." That meant he was a candidate. Now the conflict was in the open, and Roosevelt was ready to fight.
In his speeches, Roosevelt criticized Taft bitterly. In a voice shaking with hatred, he said Taft was controlled by conservative politicians. He said Taft stood in the way of progress. He said Taft was disloyal. Taft had to answer. In one speech he said, "This tears my soul. I am here to answer an old and true friend who has made many charges. I deny all those charges. I do not want to fight Theodore Roosevelt, but I am going to fight him." After the speech, a reporter looked for the president. He found him sitting alone, his head in his hands. His eyes were filled with tears. "Roosevelt was my closest friend," Taft said.
And that is our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from America and around the world.